You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Monday to you. We appreciate you being here. We got a lot for you today on today's show. We'll talk about Arkansas, Florida. We'll give some midterm grades about Razorback basketball. Also, Razorback softball, Razorback baseball. They're in the preseason polls, or some preseason polls that were released this morning. Much more to come on today's show. You know, we're a sports show, and we're going to talk plenty about sports today, but I think I would have a guilty conscience the rest of the day if I didn't just use this platform to say something that was on my mind. And it's related to the wildfires in Los Angeles that are just terrifying and horrifying. As we see, you know, everything that's happening there, just a heartbreaking, unfortunate situation, I think, for the people. And I just want to say this. If you're able, give something to the people of Los Angeles, whether it be the American Red Cross, whether it be, if you're a member of a local church, there's a pretty good chance that your denomination has, at the national level, some sort of emergency preparedness team that deploys in times like these. And, you know, so whatever the organization you can give, whatever the amount you can give, it doesn't necessarily have to be money. In these moments like this, I think back to Hurricane Katrina when I was in college, and just the horrific pictures that came out of New Orleans after that. And, you know, people have lost everything. They don't have food. They don't have shoes in a lot of instances. So, you know, it might be some cans of food that you have in your pantry. It might be a crate of water that you are able to donate. It might be a pair of shoes that you put away in your closet, you wore one time and you never took them back, that you're able to donate to people. And just think about someone who is in such a state of upheaval, and what a plate of food or a drink of water or a pair of shoes might do for them, to encourage them and to nourish them and get them through the day. This is such a terrible scene that's going on in Los Angeles. It's something that I think, you know, we've seen it throughout the weekend, how it was mentioned in every sporting event you saw. It's something that really is just one of the most I don't even know, one of the saddest situations I think we've seen in quite some time. It's not Hurricane Katrina in terms of loss of life, but in terms of loss of livelihood and property, it's right up there with Katrina as one of the greatest disasters that I've ever seen in my lifetime. So I just wanted to say that. Just if you can give something to Los Angeles. I know that there are thousands upon thousands of people who are in need in this time, and I'm hopeful that everyone can give something toward the victims of what's happening in Los Angeles. Arkansas and Florida on Saturday, the Razorbacks lose this game 71-63. Anthony Christensen here with me. He's our basketball reporter for WholeHogSports.com. It's a game, Anthony, where I thought they looked better than in any of the other SEC games that they played against Ole Miss or Tennessee. Maybe a low bar. Didn't look great against Tennessee. You know, they had their moments against Ole Miss. Certainly didn't look good in the second half. So I think that there are some reasons to maybe be encouraged about what you're seeing in some ways. But obviously, the win loss is what everyone is focused on in their 0-3. And so it's a weird dynamic right now with this basketball team, because, you know, you think about this, who they played. They played Tennessee. They played Ole Miss. They played Florida. Those are three of the best teams in the SEC. Mm-hmm. Two of them, Tennessee and Florida, I think they're national championship contenders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I don't know that I expected them to be any better than 1-2 right now. I think that I was probably like a lot of people, and I kind of penciled in Ole Miss as a win, but I think you underestimate Chris Beard's team at your own risk. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they're a game off from where people thought they were going to be at this point. But you look at that 0-3, and it's the first time that John Calipari's had an 0-3 team since the first year that he was in coaching in 1988-89.
And I remember it's easy it like to, it was yesterday.
It's easy to pile on this team. And you know, maybe people are throwing the frustrations that they had from football onto basketball. And there's a lot of negativity about this team. I'm not ready to throw in the towel yet, because I see some things that I think are encouraging. And I see a schedule that is not going to be national championship contender, really good team, national championship contender, boom, 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 out of the gates. But you know, as we've said several times, there are also a lot of discouraging things, and we'll get into this, you know, as the show goes on. There's some discouraging things, though, about this team that just don't necessarily seem to be fixing themselves, even when there are some areas where it seems like it's getting better.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you know, things that they're doing well. I mean, the defense, I thought, for the most part, was pretty good, and right now they're rated as the 26th best defense in the country by KenPom. And not that KenPom is the end-all, be-all. I know I reference it a lot, but, I mean, they've got a good defense, and I thought they showed that. You know,
they're getting stops.
Times.
They're just not getting rebounds.
Exactly, yeah. Their first shot defense has been really good, and then, you know, sometimes they're giving up 2-3 opportunities for teams to score, which just isn't something that's going to lead to a lot of success, especially when you're playing against teams like Tennessee, Ole Miss, and Florida, who are all, I mean, maybe Ole Miss aside, but Tennessee and Florida very good on the boards. Ole Miss not bad on the boards, but you can't give up, you know, that many opportunities against, you know, national title contenders, which, you know, I feel pretty confident in putting Tennessee and Florida in that discussion at this point. You can see it at the start of both of the previous two games, Ole Miss and Florida. Their offense started really well, got off to a 9-point lead in both of those games, and then just kind of flatlined a little bit going forward from there, going into big time, you know, droughts, long periods of time without hitting field goals, and then their free throw shooting isn't good enough to sustain that either, at least not at this point in time. So you kind of need them to improve that. I mean, their offense right now, you switch it just to conference. Just to the three conference games, and obviously it might be a little bit skewed just because, I mean, they played two national title contenders, but you want to beat that Ole Miss team, especially at home. They're 16th in the SEC in effective field goal percentage. So, that's not great. In fact, it's not good at all. It's still early in conference play. I mean, I'm not pressing the panic button just yet, but the glass covering is off. I'm looking at it. Sometimes I've rubbed the top of the button in consideration of pushing it, but the button hasn't been pushed yet. Now, lose to LSU, that button I think is getting pushed.
Yeah, no, for sure.
But it's a tempting push right now, but I haven't pushed it yet.
I thought the effort was there against Florida. I thought, you know, especially those first, you know, I know it's a 40-minute game, but those first 4 or 5 minutes, the way they extended their defense and they came out, and I mean, they really hit Florida with a haymaker at the start, and you know, like a good team does, Florida, they took that and they responded, and they played well throughout the game. They extended that defense early, and I don't know if it was something that Florida was doing. I don't know if it was just something that was unsustainable from a, you know, conditioning standpoint for Arkansas to do that for 40 minutes. But I thought that, you know, at some point, somewhere about 6-7 minutes into the game, you could see the defense start to kind of fall back a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know, those first few minutes, they were picking guys up at half court, if not beyond half court, and really setting a tone defensively. And then that ended, and, you know, they from that point on, Florida outscored them by about 17 points. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a big key to the game. They just couldn't keep up that kind of pace. But, you know, you look at Arkansas, 60 field goal attempts. 35 foul shots. They hold Florida to 39% shooting. They hold Florida to 28% from three. That should win you a lot of games.
Yeah.
Especially when you're at home, but you have to rebound. Mm-hmm. You have to rebound. And this was a lot like the Tennessee game again, where the 16 second chance points against Tennessee, when you play so poorly against them, it makes a difference, but it was not the difference in winning and losing. The 19 second chance points against Florida, I mean, you could make a strong argument that that was the difference between winning and losing.
Yeah, and that kind of comes back to the physicality aspect that Calipari had mentioned, you know, going into conference play after that win against Oakland. You know, he said pretty bluntly that he didn't think they were ready for the SEC's level of physicality, which I don't think you can really argue with at this point of the season, because they're 0-3 in SEC play and have been out-rebounded in each of those games. You know, the Ole Miss rebounding margin was just a 1-rebound difference, but it's still, they got out-rebounded. So, I mean, they've been out-rebounding each of their three games, and
frankly, an average of 11 a game.
And two of those three, it's been not particularly close. And that you mentioned it there. I mean, that really does rear its head when you look at the offensive rebounding and the second chance points. And I'm not sure anybody's keeping track of third chance points, but I'm sure Tennessee and Florida got some of those as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to do that. I mean, defensive rebounding. I mean, your defense, especially on the first shot, has been good. But you need to secure the rebounds, or else, I mean, eventually a team is going to score, especially good teams like Tennessee and Florida, and really any team in the SEC. If you're going to just allow them to keep getting these offensive boards, I mean, they're gonna score. And I mean, it's tough. I mean, just because you look at it is a difficult opening three games to start with.
Brutal.
So you don't want to lose sight of that, but at the same time, you start 0-3 in the conference with that Ole Miss game being a game that, frankly, I think you should be winning, especially at home. Not to take away from Ole Miss or anything, because obviously they're a good team, but when you play against them at home, you get out to two separate 9-point leads. I mean, that's a game you should be winning.
Maybe the SEC is physical across the board, but I feel like this is like boom, boom, boom. As bad of a matchup as they can get when you have a head coach talking about they've got to be stronger, they've got to be more physical, and then maybe there are other teams that I'm not thinking about, but you're going to be hard-pressed to find three more physical or at least physically imposing teams than these three they played outside of the, you know, right out of the gate.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you can throw, like, Auburn in there.
Yeah.
I mean, assuming Jahni Broome is healthy, which I know he's got his ankle issues right now.
I think Missouri would be up there.
Missouri,
they play this weekend.
Yes, yeah, Missouri, obviously.
I got some big old guys.
Yeah, Josh Gray in the middle. I mean, he's not going to be the most – he's not going to score you a lot of points if you're Missouri, but, I mean, he's a rebounding
machine.
Kind of
like a football team trying to run on Vita Vea of the Buccaneers. That's what Gray's like whenever they put him down in the post at Missouri.
Yeah.
We've seen him from South Carolina previously. I mean, he's an absolute load in there.
Yeah, and then, I mean, even going beyond, you know, Josh Gray, I mean, they've got Trent Burns, who's not necessarily the most physical guy there is, but, you know, he's a good player. They've got Aiden Shaw, who has shown kind of flashes of potential throughout his time there. But, you know, they do have that physical capability. Georgia's got some physical guys. You know, Kentucky, Otega Owe, you know, in there as well. I mean, those are games that are coming up. And they need to get, you know, used to that physicality, I guess, which is something that has been kind of a theme in all of the post-game press conferences after these SEC games. I mean, Jonas Adu had mentioned it a little bit after the Florida game, just like, I need to be more physical. I've been in the SEC. I know what this is, and I need to kind of take ownership of that. And
preseason,
I thought he was pretty good against Florida.
Preseason, I think you'd probably look at Jonas Adu and say that's one of the guys, and he just hasn't been himself yet.
Yeah, yeah, no, and that's kind of one of the issues is kind of the front court. I mean, I thought it was better against Florida. I thought Jonas Adu in particular had a much better game than he did against Ole Miss.
The effort was there.
Yeah,
the effort was there. It's just that sometimes the effort can be there, and the talent or the skill just may not match up. And I thought that's what happened against Florida.
Yeah, yeah.
Vesich is a perfect example. The effort was there from him whenever he was playing. I mean, I saw him, you know, block a shot after he got frustrated on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I saw him go for a loose ball rebound, but the strength is not there
mm-hmm.
that Florida possessed, you know, in some cases or collectively. And so again, like it's one of those. What is it? The body is willing, you know, but it's not able. That's kind of what this feels like with this basketball team.
Kind of
at least
like
inside.
When you mentioned the shot blocking, obviously Arkansas has three very capable rim protectors in Adu, Ivicic, and Trevin Brazil. But sometimes when they're blocking shots, they're like swatting them out to the perimeter, which gives the other, you know, opposing team an opportunity. And I think it was Zvonimir Ivicic who, you know, swatted a shot, got the block, but it landed right to, I want to say it was Walter Clayton, who then hit a three.
Mm.
So it was like an assist. So sometimes when you're blocking these shots, you want to almost like spike it into the ground to give yourself or your teammates who are also in that vicinity to, you know, the chance to grab that, as opposed to, you know, swatting it out to the perimeter and giving the, you know, Florida or whoever a chance to, you know, get another shot off. Or, I mean, if worse comes to worse, you know, you swat it out of bounds. But that's obviously something that I just kind of have seen in the last few games. And yeah, just, I don't know why I just felt like I should say that. I don't know.
We've got some sound bites to play for you. The first one's an extended sound bite from John Calipari. These were his opening thoughts after the loss the other night.
Top 10 team, hold them to 39% from the floor, 28% from the three. Out-rebound us by 10. A bunch of those were at the end of the game, offensive rebounds. We miss a bunch of free throws, miss a bunch of layups, and we still have a chance, and then we start missing free throws. So I got to look and say, are we playing the right people? Are we playing the right way? We're getting shots. We're getting layups. We got to the free throw line. We did all the stuff we're trying to do. And then the other thing is there was emotion showed in that game in one play. What was it? He dunks it, goes to the crowd, goes crazy. And why isn't that us? Why aren't you absolutely excited about playing? I think part of it is if someone doesn't play well, they can't get out of their own self's way. But you don't have to play great. You don't even have to play good. Just defend, dive on the floor, talk, be a great teammate, chest bump, get everybody going, and you'll bounce out of that. We haven't learned that yet. I got to do a better job. We got to make some shots. Do I got to play some different people? Probably. Maybe that big lineup is the answer for us for a while. You say, well, you won't shoot it as well. Let's, you know, it's – we just got to figure stuff out. And, like I said, disappointed. We gave ourselves a chance. And then every time it was critical, it was a missed free throw. Or, you know, and in the end, I'm still trying to tell these guys – you cannot draw fouls when you're driving for layups. You have to make the layup. Don't avoid. Just go make the layup and hope they call a foul. If you go in there to throw it, you're not making it and they're not calling it. And they'll tell you, we're not bailing you out. You had no chance of making it. We're still doing that. That's more high school AAU stuff.
All right, so that was John Calipari. A lot to unpack there, Anthony. Just your thoughts on what he had to say afterward.
Yeah, I mean, he's got, you know, a point. Obviously, they had a chance, especially when DJ Wagner had that dunk he had mentioned. You know, that cut the game to 3 points, you know, forced Florida into a timeout.
The arena, it felt like they were going to come back and maybe win the game at that point.
Yeah, that was also, I thought, the game in general, I thought was the best environment Bud Walton Arena has been, mm-hmm. you know, this season. Kansas game excluded.
It helps when you have a big opponent on the weekend.
Yes, absolutely. Not to get too sidetracked, but... You know, he mentioned the free throw shooting. I mean, you're not going to win a ton of games when you're shooting, what was it,
24 of 35.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're getting the opportunities, which is, you know, what you want. I mean, you look at last season's Kentucky team. I believe they got to the free throw line a lot. Let me just double check that real quick. But, I mean, you want those opportunities. Or, okay, maybe they didn't get that much, but they were decently... You know, they were top 25 in free throw percentage last season. This season's Arkansas team, on the other hand, obviously they've missed a lot of free throws, which has cost them games. When you look at their free throw percentage, it's 70, which is 219 in the country. Which, I mean, when you're in close games like they were against Florida, like they were against Ole Miss, not necessarily to say, you know, missing free throws is, you know, the end all be all, you know, what it's causing them to lose games. Because it's not. I mean, we mentioned the offensive rebounding. I mentioned their offensive efficiency numbers earlier. I mean, those are probably, you know, bigger reasons, but missing free throws certainly isn't going to help. So, I mean, you need those. You need the layups to go in. I mean, the stat broadcast said there were 2 of 16 on
layups.
We're
going to play the soundbite here in just a minute. Hold on to that for a minute.
Okay.
Florida defensively, they're good.
Yes,
I mean, look
absolutely.
At what,
yeah.
I know they played Kentucky in a shootout a week ago, but they held Tennessee to 24% shooting.
Yeah.
And I think it was like in the teens before Tennessee, you know, got hot and hit like 4 or 5 right at the end of the mm-hmm. game. I mean, it was unlike anything I've seen in a long time defensively from one team against a good team. I don't know that Tennessee's a great shooting team, mm-hmm. but they're not a bad shooting team.
No.
And Florida, you know, just totally locked them down. So mm-hmm. 24% against Tennessee, 30% against Arkansas. It's right there, kind of in the same ballpark.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt. But when
you
got to
make your free throws.
You need to make your free throws.
Rebounding and free throws. That's the two big. Maybe I'm missing something, but that's the two big things on this team right now. That if you can fix your free throw shooting and you can fix your rebounding, I mean, I feel like it totally changes the look of this team.
I
don't know that you can in season, but if there is some way to do it, I think it helps
you're
big time.
Winning more games, that's for sure. I mean,
and
maybe
those are two very
those
fundamental elements of basketball.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean maybe
it's not
you
like
you
you're going
up
out and saying, hey, you got to shoot 10% better from 3-point. No, it's make your free throws.
Yeah, make your free throws.
Get your rebounds.
Yeah, especially the defensive rebounds. Because, I mean, Tennessee and Florida both got, a ton of offensive rebounds. And then going on Florida's defense, I mean, you look at, I think it's, three of their last five games, they've held their opponents to 45 points or fewer, which is, two of those opponents are North Florida and Stetson, but they're still Division I basketball teams.
Right.
And then the other is Tennessee.
Yep.
Obviously the 106 against Florida's, or excuse me, Kentucky is an outlier. But I mean, they showed in that game that they can play in a shootout. They also showed, against Arkansas, they can win in a mud fight, a slog that you guys have to.
They're a good team.
Fight your way through.
They're
yeah, they can
team.
Win
they can
in
defend,
multiple ways. Yeah.
They can score. They got the big guys you want. They got the guards you want. I mean, it's one of the most complete teams.
Yeah.
That I think exists this year in college basketball. Okay, I want to play this clip real quick. This is kind of a humorous little clip. This was Anthony asking John Calipari about a 2-for-16 layup performance stat broadcast, which is an automated system that we use to have stats throughout the game, not just us, but it's provided by the university. Mm-hmm. Every school uses this. They track all kinds of different statistics, and one of them is layups. And had Arkansas 2-for-16, and here's the interaction after the game.
Yeah, and you mentioned the missed layups there, 2-of-16 on layups. Just was Florida doing anything?
Did it was that?
It was, yeah, 2-of-16.
It was 2-of-16.
That's what it says on the stat broadcast. Yeah.
No way. There's no way a team goes 2-for-16 next to the basket. Won't happen. That's wrong.
Okay.
It's 2-for-10 maybe, not 2-for-16. No way.
Okay, so even if it is 2-for-10, that's still 20% on layups. And and these aren't just, you're getting breakaway uncontested layups. This is stuff, where it's contested at. And there's, it's probably pretty ambiguous about what's considered a layup and what's not considered a layup. But point being, Arkansas is not hitting their shots near the basket, and that was a big problem against Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you look at it, it kind of goes back again to that offensive efficiency number that is 16th out of 16 in the SEC. That frankly, you need to improve upon, or effective field goal. Their efficiency is 15th out of 16. To clear that up. I made a mistake there earlier, so I apologize for that. I mean, when you look at the way Arkansas runs its offense, so much of it is that driving to the basket, and so much of it is kind of, centered around that and around, getting to the rim and kind of contesting those shots there and trying to get to the foul line as well. When you're not making those shots and you're not making your free throws, it's going to be tough to win games. I mean, that kind of is, where it goes. It just is that, and not to say that they're losing games solely because of one thing or another, but when you're compounding all these different things together, I mean, that's why you're losing these games.
A lot more Razorback basketball talk to come. We've got some more Calipari sound, some sound from Todd Golden, talk about Nellie Davis and what's going on with him, and we'll give a little bit of a midterm report on Arkansas basketball. First, I want to tell you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Also hope you'll subscribe to our podcast on either Apple or Spotify. You can search Whole Hog Sports and find it there. You can also find a video version of our podcast on YouTube, and we post it every day to our Facebook and Twitter channels on social media at Whole Hog Sports. Search Whole Hog Sports on any of those platforms, and you'll find our content. Hope you'll leave us a review. It'll help other people find our show. We appreciate you listening to us. We've got a word from our sponsor, and then more Arkansas basketball talk next.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. They're located in Uptown Rogers, and the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Arkansas losing to Florida. They're 0-3 in the SEC now. And I understand people are upset about being 0-3. I get it. It's not what you expect from a Calipari coach team. I guarantee you it's not what Calipari expects from one of his teams. Like we mentioned earlier, first time since the 88-89 season that he's had a team winless in conference play through three games. That was his first season as a head coach. UMass started 0-6 in the A-10. So 33 years, two teams that start 0-3, you don't expect this kind of start, and I know that it's got to be just eating at him. And and there are people in the national media, there are people in the Kentucky media who are really taking, you know, their chance probably to get some pot shots in that they haven't had a chance to do in recent years. But I think that they, you know, look, they're 0-3 against good teams in the SEC, and they looked bad against Tennessee. I don't know that they looked terrible the last two games. There were elements of their game that did not look good offensively. Obviously, they're struggling. But, you know, how many people have we heard say that in the SEC this year, you could go 7-11 and still make the NCAA tournament?
We've definitely heard John Calipari say it.
And you've heard other people say it. I think I've heard some of the so-called, you know, the Lenardis of the world say something like that or similar.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you get those opportunities. Obviously, the SEC, I don't know if it's still this way. I need to look at the net and everything, which I have not done in a little bit, which is an indictment on myself, I guess. But I mean, at least as of, you know, earlier in the season, 15 of 16 road games would be quad one opportunities. So I mean, it's not like they don't have the opportunities to, you know, turn
and
this
the one that's not a quad one is who?
South Carolina.
Who did what on Saturday?
Took Auburn to the
wire. Nearly beat them.
Yeah.
In their home arena. So
with Jani Broome out for a lot of that game. But,
okay, but I mean, but it's still a good Auburn team.
Yes,
I would think, I mean, if you look at Auburn and South Carolina on paper, you would say, okay, you take Jani Broome out, and Auburn should still beat these guys.
Yes.
So you don't want to be the team that goes 7-11 in the SEC, but you'll take it. If that gets you to the NCAA tournament, you'll take that record.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, here's the thing about the Razorbacks right now, and this may change tomorrow night in LSU. They don't have that killer loss on the schedule right now.
No.
You look at the five teams they've lost to,
they're all good.
Five of them are in the top 23 of the net rankings this morning. Mm-hmm. Three of them are in the top nine, Tennessee, Florida, and Illinois.
Yeah.
So if they can – I still think there's some sort of turnaround coming. I don't think this team's going away 18 in the SEC. I think they're going to win their fair share of SEC games. And they're not the only team that's struggling in the SEC. There's five teams right now that haven't won a game.
One of them being the team that they're playing next.
Yeah, Texas is in that boat.
Texas, I mean, is there.
People thought Texas, OU, who was undefeated after non-conference.
Going into this play, yeah. So
South Carolina took Auburn to the Marine.
There's plenty of opportunities.
Here's what I wanted to say about this. this is not a death knell.
No.
This 0-3 conference start. And if you look, and you know why, you know how you can tell it's not? Look at Arkansas the past few years.
Yeah.
You know what Eric Musselman's teams had SEC records of? It was like, his best SEC start was actually his first team. They started 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
And that team wasn't going to go to the NCAA tournament. The season got shut down by COVID. I know a lot of people think they were going to get to the NCAAs. I don't. Mm-hmm. I think that team was headed for the NIT. It, unless they won in Nashville, and I don't think that was happening. They would have had to have won 5 in 5 days. But his last four teams had SEC records of, at their worst, pretty much at their worst, 2-4, 0-3, 1-5, and 1-6.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like Arkansas has been this SEC behemoth for the last years. I know that Calipari comes in, and people expect Arkansas to be, you know, setting the world on fire. I don't know how realistic or fair those expectations were. But you think about those teams of Musselman, the team that went 0-3 and the team that went 2-4 and the team that went 1-5, all three of those teams went to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. Two of them were went away from playing for the Final Four or going to the Final Four. So you can say the SEC wasn't as strong then as it is now. That may be fair. But if the league is as strong as people are saying, I don't know that an 0-3 start, especially against the type of teams that they played, is, I understand that they're not playing well, but I think that there are better things to come for this basketball team. I really do. We may be having this conversation next Monday. They may be 0-5 and they've lost to LSU and Missouri, and I say, forget everything I just said. I still think that there's some promise for them in there.
Yeah, you would think so. And, I mean, when you look at it, I mean, they've got the talent. I mean, when you got, obviously, Boogie Fland is still looking like potential first-round pick in the NBA draft. DJ Wagner's shown some flashes. Adu Thiro, has been really good for the most part. So, I mean, they've got, the talent to do that. They've got the talent to turn it around. They've got the opportunities coming up to turn it around. I think one of the big things that when you look at, this team and why there's a lot of, I guess, negativity or people being down on them. Right now, they've got one win against the first two quadrants, which is Michigan. I mean, that Michigan win come Selection Sunday could be huge. And, I mean, they had to come back from 15 points down in that game. I mean, if that doesn't happen, I mean, you're looking at, a much more negative situation. But obviously,
what is it? One quad one win, 5 quad 1 losses. Is that right?
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah. So 1-5 against quad one, and then just the one win in the first two quadrants. Their second best win is Lipscomb.
And outside of Michigan, they didn't look like, again, Ole Miss and Florida, they had their chance to make it a game in the second half. Mm-hmm. But like against none of those five teams that they lost to, I mean, you never felt like they were in the Baylor game.
No.
Right?
I mean, they came back and tied it a couple times, but it never really felt like
they were going
like
to
win
the game. Never felt like they were going
to
win the Illinois game.
No, Illinois dominated
Tennessee,
that game from
obviously.
Start to
finish. So that, I think that's part of the frustration, is that there just has been a lack of competitiveness in most of their marquee games.
Yeah.
A lack of them leading. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't lead many of those games for very long.
Their first lead against a power conference team came with 1:40 against
Miami who's,
which that Miami team is not good.
This was Todd Golden after the game Saturday.
Huge win, a huge win for us. I think, we were fighting a little bit of human nature after Tuesday night, great win for us. And we were a little fatigued, both emotionally and physically, and I was a little worried about how we would be able to respond against a team that was awfully hungry and competitive. And early on, obviously, we struggled a little bit, but our guys were pretty resilient. I thought we fought. We weren't perfect, but we competed well enough to win.
And that's all you can really ask for, especially when you're on the road in a good environment like it was Saturday. All right, some midterm thoughts on this team. Here's my number one takeaway. This team is going to go as far as Nellie Davis improves. If he doesn't improve, the team's not going to improve.
Mm-hmm.
They bring this guy in, averaging 18 points a game last year at FAU. And I don't know that they expected him to average 18 points a game at Arkansas, but I think they probably expected him to come pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
You don't go out and get a scorer and expect him to be less of a scorer when he comes into your program. Now, obviously, he's going to have, ideally he would have more scorers around him. But, I think they thought that they were going to get a scorer, and they have not gotten that from Nellie Davis. He averaged 18 points a game last year. He hasn't scored 18 yet in a game.
Yeah.
Most he's had was 16, and that was against Eastern Shore, who was the worst team that they played all year.
Worst team that I've seen in person in my college basketball.
They're right up there with UAPB football back in August. So if he's going to continue to stand around the perimeter and jack up threes, this team's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
At FAU, and we've talked about this, he put the ball on the floor. He got to the rim. He created his own shot. And that's
not. He was physical.
We haven't seen that from him this year. And it could be a wrist injury. I mean, it could be the wrist injury that's still bothering him. We don't know what the severity of that injury was. We just know it's something that's been lingering. And we know it's something that's caused him to lose a couple or not to play a couple of games at the end of the non-conference. I'm not going to say that he's the missing link, but I think he is a missing link on this basketball team. He was not signed to play 45 minutes and go scoreless against the two best teams on their schedule, Tennessee and Florida.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, arguably two of the best teams.
Yeah.
And he's got to pick it up. They've got to get something out of him. And right now, more often than not, they're getting nothing out of him.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, I mean, when you look at his numbers from – you know, last season and previous seasons, it's not like he's just doing it against, you know, mid-major teams in the American. I mean, he scored 35 against an Arizona team that was a two-seed in the NCAA tournament. Or was that last season that they were a two-seed and lost to Princeton? No, that was 2 years ago.
But they, a good
they
team.
Made, yeah, I mean, no, they made the NCAA tournament.
It's a good
tournament.
Arizona team program.
19 against Illinois, 26 against Texas A&M. All teams that were in the NCAA tournament. I don't know that it's him maybe struggling to adapt to the different offense, because obviously, you know, a Dusty May offense is different to a John Calipari offense. And, you know, he was in a Dusty May offense for 4 years, and this is his first time being out of that in a college, in the college level. So maybe it's still taking some time for him to adjust to that. He's not playing the same way he did at Florida Atlantic, and that's just not really a question.
It's not what you paid him to come in and do.
Exactly.
Did you hear Barnes?
Yes.
Talking about taking out Chaz Lanier the other day?
Because that's not he
said because that's
he
not what
he shot and he wanted the shot and he didn't take it and you're going to sit over here because that's what you're paid to do.
Exactly.
If you just read the quote, it came off worse than what it was. If you watched the quote, he was obviously saying it in a semi-joking.
Basically,
manner,
they ran a play. Yes. For people who don't know, they ran a play for Chaz Lanier and he didn't take the shot that Barnes wanted him to take. And so Barnes pulls him out and puts him on the bench and told him, it's like, you're paid to take that shot. Mm-hmm. And if you're not going to do it, then you're going to sit over here on the bench.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, obviously, like.
And I think you're seeing that a little bit with Nelly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were some moments on Saturday where he wasn't in the game for very long.
Mm-hmm.
He went in and he made a bad play and they pulled him right out. And then I think there was a time where he came out and they were booing him. Some people in the arena were booing him.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, I think it was on the clip that that you played earlier, but, you know, John Calipari has alluded to maybe playing different lineups, maybe trying something else. And I think the question as to whether John L. Davis is, you know, in those lineups is a valid one, just because of how he's played for the most part this season. Obviously, the first half against Ole Miss, he was pretty good. He was good against Lipscomb in the opener, but few and far between.
If he's not going to give you anything, then what's the point of playing him?
Yeah.
If it's a net negative to play him in terms of the other team is going to outscore you by 12 when he's on the floor, then, what is he doing right now that's going to justify giving him minutes? He's not scoring.
Yeah.
He's not playing great defense.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real question that I think that they're probably wrestling with over there.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I mean, he mentioned, you know, maybe going with that big lineup of Adu Thiro at the three and Brazil and Adu in the front court, at the expense of some shooting, but they're not exactly shooting well right now, as he kind of alluded to. So it is an interesting question because I mean they've already got a short bench just kind of by design, Do you shorten the rotation even more, just kind of maybe sitting him down, maybe, you know, trying to get him to respond, maybe. I'm not sure what the answer is. And maybe he does turn it around. I mean, you look at Grant Nelson last season at Alabama. I'm not sure it was ever, you know, this pertinent, I guess is the right word to use.
But there was an adjustment.
Absolutely. and he was coming from obviously the Summit League, so it's a different level. You would expect the American to be better, but he did come along later in the season. Maybe that's something you expect to see from John L. Davis, but right now the signs just aren't there.
I had a coach tell me one time, this was many, many years ago, this is somebody who coached a long time ago, they said that a junior college player, you didn't expect much out of him until maybe the second half of his first season, but really until his second season. And I wonder if maybe there's some of that with these players who are coming up from mid-major leagues who, you know, like, maybe not as long as a junior college player takes, but, you know, that there is an adjustment that, you know, you do have to have a little bit of a waiting period. I don't know. And it's tough because, you know, then you look at a Dalton Connect who came in and just totally dominated when he came in. Maybe
it's kind of a case-by-case basis, I think. Obviously, you look at, you know, Grant Nelson took a while. Chaz Lanier come in and, you know, been one of maybe top 10 players in the country this season. But then you look at, you know, John L. Davis, who has just not been that. Or like a Coleman Hawkins at Kansas State, who just hasn't, you know, lived up to that. And, you know, there's a bunch of different examples. You know, Umar Ballo at Indiana hasn't been the best. You know, there's a lot to look at in that regard.
But then again, like a Zeke Mayo goes to KU.
Zeke Mayo, and he's been good. Very good. And then staying in line with Kansas, AJ Storr has not been very good. So
okay, so I've got some thoughts here real quick, just to keep us moving. Just some thoughts on the other eight rotation players. You tell me if you think any of these are unfair. Adu Thiroux, DJ Wagner, I've got written down here. I think they're good, solid players. Mm-hmm. You know what you're going to get out of them most nights.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, both of them are pretty much, I shouldn't say a lock, but most nights you're going to get double-digit points out of both of them. You know, I think he may be one of the more underrated players on this team. It just seems like there's a consistency with him that just
And
is
I don't know if it's maybe because he doesn't have the ball
in his hand. I think he gets to the rim as well as anybody.
Yeah, I don't know if it's maybe because he just doesn't have the ball in his hands as much as he did last season at Kentucky, which is obviously by design. You have, you know, Boogie Flynn kind of being the floor general. But I think he's much better in that off-ball role than he is as the primary ball handler. At least that's my opinion. Maybe other people feel otherwise. But,
Adu and Brazil, they're giving Arkansas some good minutes. I mean, mm-hmm. Brazil, you look up and you're like, wow, he had 7 rebounds. I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. But they got to give Arkansas more. They've got to own the boards more.
Absolutely.
And they've got to give Arkansas some more of a presence, I think, on both ends. Mm-hmm. Inside, you know, I mean, obviously, both of them have had their share of injuries. That may have something to do with it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Zonimir Visic, another guy who I guess he turned his ankle again in practice, like after the Ole Miss game and before the Florida game. He just seems like he can't get real healthy. He's got to get stronger. Mm-hmm. And they've got to find what his role is on this team. He had a really good role.
It's been inconsistent. Yeah.
I mean, he had a really good role at the beginning of the season. And then over the last, you know, 7-8 games, there's just, mm-hmm. it's like he goes out there and you're wondering what's the point of all this.
Like, I mean, after I think it was the Troy game when he had all those threes, you mm-hmm. know, John Calipari came out after the game and was like, you know, we probably need to be getting him 5 looks from the perimeter every game, whereas opposed to, you know, going into the season he said, I don't want Z taking any threes. So it's I don't know if maybe he's struggling with this kind of like, you know, actually, we want you here. Yeah, actually, let's put you here. You know, maybe he's struggling to adapt to all these different roles that he's being asked to play. Maybe that's it. Obviously, he had the injury going into the Miami game, and then he got hurt again, I believe, going into the Ole Miss game, if I'm not mistaken. You know, he was once a starter, then he wasn't a starter. So, I mean, maybe he's struggling for consistency just because, you know, his role's been a bit inconsistent, but you do need more out of him.
I don't know if he can get stronger before the season ends. Mm-hmm. That's his biggest problem, it looks like to me right now. The physicality is not there of the players that he's playing. Being tall does not guarantee you rebounds. I think that's what he is. That's what he's shown. Boogie Flan, he's not a good 3-point shooter. He's got to cut mm-hmm. those down. I think he's got a good mid-range game. He's got to get back to looking for his teammates. I feel like the last couple of games, that's been lacking in his game.
Yeah, and it's been lacking in Arkansas's game in general. I wrote about this in the takeaway story I wrote. Arkansas, against teams in the top 100 of KenPom, average 11.7 assists per game. Against teams outside of the top 100, they're at 18.6, which obviously when you're playing against higher level opposition, you know, those numbers are going to dip a little bit. I don't think you can afford to have them dip by seven assists per game. You know, their ball movement hasn't been as good. when you're looking at, you know, this is going to be an extreme example, but when you're playing against Central Arkansas versus when you're playing against Tennessee, your ball movement isn't as good, which obviously that's going to be because of the difference in quality between those teams. But you need your ball movement to be better against some of these better teams, better than what it has been. I'm not saying that they need to go out and get 26 assists like they did against, I believe it was Central Arkansas. They definitely had 26 assists in one game, but you don't need that against Tennessee, but you need it to be more than 9, which I think it was against Tennessee.
And then finally I got here, freshman Carter Knox and Billy Richmond, consistency is just lacking from both of them. I'd like to see Knox get more shots. I think he's got a pretty decent you know, mid-range, even three-point game. And then Richmond, he gives them the hustle minutes. I don't know if there's anybody else on the team that, that has a bigger motor than he does. But it's just – it's kind of like it's a little erratic too.
Yeah, sometimes – yeah, like you mentioned, can be a little erratic. But, you know, he – I think his best game is in his defense, Billy Richmond. I mean, that's kind of where he's – kind of made his name, kind of how he, you know, kind of shot up recruiting rankings, you know, in the last, I think, 2 years of his high school career, went from being like in the 70s to the 20s of kind of these recruiting rankings. And a lot of that kind of came from his defense. You know, he's a very good perimeter defender as well. But sometimes you mentioned it, the consistency, both him and Carter Knox, which when you're not going to be, or you're not projected to be, you know, one and done level freshman, you're gonna have those moments where you're not as consistent, you know, especially when you're getting into SEC play, you're playing against these better teams, you're not playing against Maryland Eastern Shore. But I mean, even against, you know, Michigan, I thought those guys gave some minutes. Billy Richmond, I don't think played that much against Michigan. I think he was sick. But I thought Carter Knox had some productive times. But I mean, they've shown moments against good teams that they belong on the floor, but that consistency kind of needs to show up, which, you know, can be hard for a freshman.
You can read Anthony's more of his takeaways on the game at our website, wholehogsports.com. We still got some football, baseball, some softball to get to in just a moment, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Arkansas football lost a legend over the weekend. Tommy Trantham died at the age of 79 on Sunday at a hospital in Little Rock. Trantham was a 3-time All-Southwest Conference defensive back for the Razorbacks, and if you're watching the video right now, you're going to see his fumble return against Texas in 1965, a 77-yard fumble return for a touchdown against the Longhorns. This was part of a Razorback win, 27-24 in Fayetteville. Arkansas won that game. You know, a lot of the old-timers believe that's one of the great games, if not the greatest Razorback football game ever played. Tommy Trantham, he went on to have a little bit of coaching in Hot Springs, was an assistant coach at Hot Springs High School. There you see a picture of him with Frank Broyles. He's wearing number 43. Tommy Trantham, part of Razorback teams from 1965 to 67 that had a combined record of 22-8-1. And again, he passed away on Sunday. A lot of records that Tommy Trantham either held at the time that his playing career ended or even now. at the time his career ended, he had 12 interceptions in his career. That was a school record. It's been broken a couple of times since, including by Steve Atwater, who had 14, which is the current record in the 1980s. And then his record of 300 interception return yards is still a record for, and it has been for almost six decades at Arkansas. So the Razorbacks, like we said, had a lot of great players in the 1960s on those teams that won 22 in a row. They won some other Southwest Conference championships outside of the long winning streak. And Tommy Trantham, one of those. And you can read more about his death. We've got an obituary on our site where we talked to some of his former teammates at WholeHogSports.com. But Tommy Trantham has passed away at the age of 79. Some other Razorback football notes from the weekend. Arkansas is expected to hire Nick Perry as its defensive backs coach. Perry would replace Darren Wilson on staff. You might remember Wilson reportedly took the job as a defensive coordinator at Georgia State last week. Perry has spent the past year with the Seattle Seahawks in an assistant, what would you say, like an assistant position coach role.
Yeah, yeah.
Before that, he was with the Atlanta Falcons, played at Alabama, started as a GA at Alabama. I think he was also a quality control coach there, was part of four national championship teams, either as a player or a support staff member at Alabama under Nick Saban. So Nick Perry, who's 33 years old, will be Arkansas's next defensive backs coach. You know, this is not really that surprising. When you look at what Sam Pittman has done with this role, it's always been a young coach who's kind of getting a chance to see what they can do at this level. Sam Carter was here for 2 years. He'd been a GA at Missouri. He leaves. Dominic Bowman comes in for a year. He had just finished his first year coaching at FBS, and it was at Marshall. And then the last couple of years with Darren Wilson, he had been a quality control coach at Florida. So this is one of those roles, Anthony, that they use to evaluate, I think, a little bit how a guy can coach and recruit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean,
it's one of the benefits of having a 10th assistant coach because, you know, when Pittman got here, it was only nine.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it gives, you know, guys opportunities to, you know, step into bigger roles, like you mentioned, obviously going from a GA role to, you know, a full-time role or something along those lines. And it gives those guys opportunities, which I always like seeing young coaches get those chances, which I always kind of find that kind of stuff fun. But it's an interesting hire. He's coming down from the NFL and everything along those lines. So sometimes that can be a little different just because of the differences between the NFL and college football. But it's an interesting one for sure.
Dazmon James has transferred to Cal Berkeley.
Oppenheimer University.
James obviously had the game of his life against Texas Tech at the Liberty Bowl, ran for a 94-yard touchdown, and it was kind of like Forrest Gump. He just kept running.
Yeah.
And he's ended up in California. That's where he's going to end up playing.
I don't know
next
why,
season.
But every time I think of Cal, the University of, you know, University of California at Berkeley, since seeing the movie, and then I read American Prometheus after seeing the movie. I think about Oppenheimer every time I think of Cal.
I think of Calipari, but it's different brands work different ways.
I don't know. I'm a nerd.
Arkansas also got a commitment over the weekend, actually a signing. This is official. Rohan Jones, a tight end from Montana State. Montana State, for those who don't know, they're an FCS superpower. Mm-hmm. They've lost in the national championship game the last 2 years, including last week, to North Dakota State. But Jones, 6'3", 240 pounds, reading Richard Davenport's notes here, after he got into the transfer portal, following the FCS championship game, had offers from Wake Forest, North Carolina, Houston, Louisville, UCLA, and Kentucky, had 30 catches for 470 yards and 9 touchdowns this year at Montana State. He previously played at Maine before he went to Montana State. So that's quite the arc, Maine to Montana to Fayetteville.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned obviously coming from, you know, a really good FCS program like Montana State. Obviously the Dakotas kind of run FCS football.
Yeah.
Montana State is really good.
Idaho or the Dakotas, you're probably having a good time in the FCS.
Yeah. You're having fun. But you know, it's interesting. It's kind of going back to the different jumps, you know, that FCS to FBS jump, especially FCS to FCC, you know, it can be interesting. Sometimes it doesn't work, but other times it works really well. So it'll be interesting to see just kind of how he handles that kind of adjustment, that kind of jump. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
Do you want baseball or let me back up here real quick? Arkansas needs tight ends.
That's
a position of need for them. They got Platt from Texas A&M. I feel like Platt looks like more in the Puska
more mold, of a blocking more kind of a blocker. Guy. Yeah.
This is a guy who maybe gives them, you know, some of what they lost with Lucas. We'll see.
Yeah.
Baseball. D1 baseball rankings came out this morning. Arkansas ranked number 5. You remember we talked about perfect game rankings on here last week, and I said when you've got such a small pool of people who are voting in these polls, which like perfect game, I think there may only be 2 or 3 voters in their poll. Mm. And so when you've got such a small pool of people who are voting in that poll, if one person is sour on a team, it can really tank it. I mean, so like somebody may say, well, hey, I think you're number 7. But if somebody says, I think you're number 19, you're number 13. And that's how, now I'm not saying those were the two, but it would have been something like that.
Yeah.
And that's why they ended up number 13 in the perfect game poll. We had Baseball America, Jacob Rudner from Baseball America on a couple of weeks ago. He said that when their poll comes down, Arkansas will be top 5. Mm-hmm. Here they are, number 5 in the D1 baseball poll. I suspect they're going to be top 5, top 10 in the coaches poll, mm-hmm. which is the poll that we use as our poll of record. You got to pick one. You can't just pick the highest ranking and go with it, even though that's what a lot of SIDs do. So coaches poll is what we use as our ranking of record. That one's not out yet. But obviously D1 baseball, a lot of respect for Kendall Rogers and Aaron Fitt and Joe Healy and all Mark Etheridge, the people who work over there, Mike Rooney. And so here's what they've got. They got Arkansas number 5, but it's as you might suspect, there's a lot of SEC teams.
Representation.
A&M's number 1. Mm-hmm. I don't think that surprises anybody. No. When you look at what A&M's got coming back with Jace LaViolette and Gavin Grahovac and
obviously being Caden in the championship
Caden
series.
Caden Sorrell and Ryan Prager is back. I mean, he was. If it hadn't been for Hagan Smith last year, he would have been the SEC Pitcher of the Year.
Yeah.
They've got some dudes back on that A&M team. Mm-hmm. Now, they're in their first year under Michael Early, mm-hmm. and you wonder if they can keep up the level of play that they had under Schlossnagel, but they're number 1. Mm-hmm. They were number 1 in the PG poll, too. LSU's number 3. All these teams that I'm going to read off, by the way, for the most part, Arkansas plays. They play A&M at home. Third-ranked LSU, they play in Baton Rouge. Fourth-ranked Tennessee, they play here at Baum in the regular season finale. Going down a little bit, 8th-ranked Georgia. Razorbacks go to Athens. 10th-ranked Florida. I don't think Florida's on the schedule this year. I need to double-check that. They might be. But you go on down. Vanderbilt's in here. Mississippi State is number 18. Vandy's number 16. Texas is there at number 19. They're going to be at Baum this year. So this is just, you know, the SEC, say what you want to about the SEC and every other sport, it doesn't compare to SEC baseball.
Yeah, no.
It's unbelievable how good SEC baseball is from top to bottom.
Yeah, and I think Texas is kind of the team that kind of intrigues me just because of the Schlossnagel kind of storylines that kind of dominated the offseason, especially right there after the College World Series.
Arkansas does play Florida, by the way.
But, yeah, they're
in Gainesville.
Yeah. It obviously SEC baseball is a gauntlet. You know, I know John Calipari had talked about, you know, oh, they're saying it's like SEC baseball. I'm not sure that it really is. SEC baseball is something else, that's for sure.
I'm looking here. Arkansas's last 8 SEC weekends are against 7 ranked teams. So most of them are in the top 10. So it's just it's incredible what SEC baseball looks like year in and year out. And it's going to be another tough one. We got a lot of baseball coverage planned for you coming up soon on our podcast and at our website. And then Softball America, they put out a preseason ranking this morning. Arkansas number 13 in the Softball America poll. So
when you talk about SEC baseball, SEC softball is real good, well, too. And especially then, I mean, when you add Oklahoma and Texas.
Exactly.
I mean,
OU's won the last 4 national championships, yep. And Texas has been the runner-up 2 of the last 3 years.
Yes. So not bad teams to be adding to your conference.
Well, and Ethan Westerman's written about this on our website. You look at the other teams in the Softball America poll, Florida's number 1, Texas number 2, Oklahoma number 3, Tennessee number 6, A&M number 7, Alabama number 11, LSU number 12. And then you get number 13, Arkansas, and there's more SEC teams after them. The Razorbacks are scheduled to play a lot of these teams that are ranked this year, including some over at Bogle Park. It's a testament, I think, to Courtney Dyfel and her mm-hmm. program, the fact that they have they're thought in this vein. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got to win on the field, but sometimes perception affects the selection committee at mm-hmm. the end of the year. And, I mean, obviously the goal for Arkansas is to be one of those top 16 teams at the end of the year where they can host a regional. Ideally, they would be top eight where they could hope a super regional too.
And
they, you know, they've done that a couple of times, and they just couldn't break through. You look at the way that she's recruited. I mean, they're every year it's number one class, number four class, number three. They're going to break through and get to Oklahoma City at some point. Mm-hmm. But Arkansas softball.
And they've got some of that Oklahoma City experience too. Obviously, Carly Davison coming over from Utah.
Totally unrelated. You know, have you seen where Oklahoma City is building the largest skyscraper in America?
I have seen that, yeah.
I live...
It's kind of...
I won't say I live off the grid because I don't, but I didn't know that until today.
Yeah, I mean, I
it's supposed to be 1,907 feet for the year that they became a state, 1907.
Yeah, it's
And as flat as Oklahoma is, you're going to be able to see that from Wotton.
Yeah. I'm going to step outside my apartment and see if I'm here.
You got some hills between here and there.
Yeah, but, no, it's still tall. I don't imagine it's taller than the hills.
Maybe we'll see the tallest building in the world, or in America, I should say. If Arkansas gets to the Women's College World Series, it won't be built yet.
Cover a game from the top.
Yeah.
You'll be able to see it. You'll be using a binocular telescope.
I got some fear of heights. I don't think I could do that. So Arkansas softball, they're number 13 in the preseason poll. They begin their season very soon, February 6th at Texas State. They get underway a couple of weeks before baseball gets underway. So we got plenty more on our website, wholehogsports.com. We got some track coverage planned this week. They start their indoor season on Friday night with a meet here in Fayetteville that's going to include Texas and Oklahoma State, maybe another team or two. So if you're interested in you're interested in sports just beyond football, basketball, come to our website. We got you covered. We appreciate you being here on our podcast today. Anthony, have a safe trip to Baton Rouge. He'll be on our show on the phone tomorrow as he makes his way down to the Maravich Center for that 8 o'clock tip-off between Arkansas and LSU tomorrow night in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Appreciate you being here. Hope you have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.